Welcome to DevelopLex, a Middle Tech production hosted by me, Weston Lockhart, and Evan Knowles. This series will focus on the ins and outs of real estate development and investing, where we'll have the opportunity to sit down with the developers of our cities, veterans of the industry, and key people that have over time made a massive impact on communities and neighborhoods. The purpose of this series is to be able to bring a knowledge base to our audience beyond that of what reading a book or watching a how-to video ever could, and educate from those who have done it by hearing their stories, both good and bad, along the way. We feel that historically the learnings of real estate have been inaccessible without being connected, and we would love to open the doors to the next generation of doers, as well as shine a light on how visions of community have been brought to life. We hope you enjoy. Before diving in, we'll get a quick word from our sponsors. DevelopLex is sponsored by SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate. We are also sponsored by Community Trust Bank. Community Trust offers a wide variety of home loans, commercial loans, and small business loans to suit your financial needs, as well as mobile banking, internet banking, and bill pay. Their friendly and professional staff would love to assist you at one of their 6 Lexington locations. Community Trust Bank is committed to building communities built on trust. Member FDIC, equal housing lender, subject to credit approval. We are also sponsored by Lexington Pavement Suite. Lexington Pavement Suite is a full-service property maintenance company operating in central Kentucky, specializing in parking lot sweeping, day portering, landscaping, and snow removal. From established retail properties to construction sites and everything in between, whether your property needs a daytime presence or a nightly sweep, Lexington Pavement Suite will be there to ensure your property is starting the day pristine. Lexington Pavement Suite is proud to be a part of DevelopLex, bringing the best of the best to all listeners. Welcome back to DevelopLex. We are stoked to say that today we have Holly Wiedemann on the podcast. And we wanted to have Holly on as she has extensive experience in real estate development and in particular adaptive reuse and affordable housing, which are both massive conversations happening in many places, but especially Lexington. So Holly, welcome on.
Thank you so much. I am absolutely delighted to be here.
Great. So let's get into your background. Where are you from?
I was actually born in Lexington, so I am right here. This is hometown.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how? So you went to school here, went to UK.
I didn't go to UK.
Okay,
I'm a little. I've kept this kind of on the low down. my undergraduate degree was in landscape architecture and urban planning, and they didn't have a certified landscape architecture school at the time, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I became a Georgia Bulldog.
Nice.
And went
National
to
champions.
Oh. And I was there. I might just say that I was there. I went to the game at the Sugar Bowl with Herschel Walker in 1980.
Incredible.
So that was the other time. It gives me goosebumps. That was the other time that happened. So I was beside myself that they could pull it off again this year. I know this podcast is really about football, but or sports. Don't get me going on sports. But so that's where I went. Undergrad, got a degree in landscape architecture and urban planning, was fortunate enough to get a fellowship in England for a year studying that, and then came back and called a former urban design professor of mine and because I wanted to go to either DC or New York. I don't know. I just wanted to do that. And at the time, he was very good friends with the head of what is called the Bureau of Outdoor Recreation, which later morphed into the National Park Service. And I thought that'd be pretty cool. And he said, Holly, I am now the director of urban planning in Tulsa, Oklahoma. and we really need an urban planner out here, I will pay for a flight for you to come out and check it out because we're trying to hire. I said, Tulsa? I don't even know where Tulsa is. And he said, well, you know, come on out. So I flew out there and I thought, I'll just stay a year or two. This is a pretty cool place. That's back when oil was $33 a barrel, which was top of, I mean, hello. The streets were paved with gold. It was very cool. Yep. Lots of building, lots of everything else going on. And I ended up being there for 5 years and loved every minute of it.
Nice. That's awesome. And so you were in Tulsa. What were you doing in Tulsa?
First in planning, and then I went to work for an architecture firm called Urban Design Group. And we did a lot of work for Williams Realty, which was a huge oil-based conglomerate that got into the development world. And we ended up doing huge mixed-use projects around the country. We did Tabor Center in downtown Denver, if you're familiar with that. We did River Center in San Antonio, which was huge. We did Independence Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. And these developments were, as a matter of fact, I was in Colorado. I was in Denver last week. And I drove by the Tabor Center because it was a 1 million square feet of office, 120,000 square feet of retail, and a Fairmont Hotel. And it is just as spectacular today as it was in the early 80s. So I was on a plane every week to either Denver, Dallas, Houston, Phoenix, San Antonio, and I absolutely loved it. But that's also when I realized I was tired of having the developer say, you know, we can't afford that. You need to redraw this and be up all night. And so I thought, I need to learn how to be a developer. Yeah, I want to be the one who's in charge and not, you know, not striving through the night redoing drawings.
So when you had that thought, you were like, I'm all in, I'm going to become a developer? Was it kind of a slow progression?
No, it was when I came to that conclusion, I thought, okay, let's see. That means I need to go to business school because I was very design oriented and I had no financial background. Yeah. And I thought, okay, so let's see, business school. I can go to Harvard Business School. How about that? And then I thought, or Yale. My father had gone to Yale. I thought, I'll just go to one of those. Yeah. This was in May of 1983. And so I write them and they say, huh, well, that's real nice that you called us, but we closed our class back in February, and you know, we're happy to talk to you next year. Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't have a year to waste time, especially if I'm the one who's planning on doing this. I'm going to pay for it. Why would I waste a year? So I just that same day, this was completely fortuitous. I'm in, you know, at my drawing board. Architectural Record comes in, which is a magazine, you know, an architecture trade magazine. On the cover is the Fuqua School of Business at Duke. And it was done by an architect that I really, really like. And it was the cover. And I thought, huh, Duke, I've heard of there. And so I got on I booked a flight Memorial Day weekend, flew there, and because it was Memorial Day weekend, nobody was there except the dean. And I had walked around the building that was designed by Edward Larrabee Barnes, which I was really intrigued by the building. and it had this very cool central atrium corridor, and it was state of the art. And so I thought, yeah, I want to go to school here. And so I go in, and since the dean is the only one there, I said, I'd like to go to school here. And he said, Oh, you would, would you? Great. Tell me about your financial background. I said, well, I have none. That's why I want to go to school here. He said, have you ever taken accounting? I said, no. He said, well, let me just make a suggestion here. I would suggest that you learn accounting because all the people that you'd be competing with have undergraduate business degrees, and you have none of that. Have you had calculus? I said, no, sir. He said, well, my advice to you would be to take a year, you know, learn this stuff, and then come back. And I said, you know what? Since I'm the one who's going to have to take out student loans, that's the only reason that I'm coming here. I need to learn what you've got. And apparently I was compelling enough at the time. He said, well, I'll tell you what. We do a math refresher course in early August. And if you can pass that, then we'll let you come to school here. Because it was too late for GREs or anything like that. So I go back to Tulsa. I actually decided that was what I was going to do. I quit my job in July, bought a calculus book, loaded up my car, which was this, and now it's listed as an antique, but it's a BMW 2002. That's not referencing a year. That was the boxy little TII BMWs. Yeah. I load that up with every bit of my possessions, drive to Durham and sign a 2-year lease, which, hello, not even knowing, I thought failure's not an option.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I passed the entrance exam and went to school there and focused in finance and took every class both in finance at Duke and also in real estate and finance at Chapel Hill. I kept that under the radar here. I don't ever tell anybody.
Yeah, Georgia and Duke, that's two.
Yeah, I know. Like,
I'm waiting for when she gets back to Lexington. I want to hear how that happened.
Well, I will tell you that it was pretty funny. I didn't want to say anything about Duke because I serve on the board at RUP, so I'll have to kill you if you tell anybody that.
Yeah. We'll make sure to tell the listeners.
Okay. Good.
Awesome. Well, cool. So, well, the theme I noticed in that is that you're incredibly driven, and that is definitely a theme that we see of developers. And you, not to say that you shoot and then look later, but it seems like you're a go-getter. So let's get into, so obviously you are in development, but give the listeners kind of a background on what you do and what your company is.
Sure. So my first job after Duke, I also met who became my husband, who had grown up in the Boston area and had gone to Harvard undergrad and was there. He didn't have student loans. Like, I paid for my education. Duke paid for him. And that was graduate school because he'd gone to Harvard undergrad. But anyway, he was one of the top PhD candidates, and Harvard asked him to come teach at the business school on the other side of the river, as it were, because Harvard proper is in Cambridge and the business school is on the other side of the river of the Charles. So we go to Boston. I started work for Wynn Development, which is one of the largest developers now, like number one of affordable housing in the country. And that was a pretty amazing opportunity because at the time, in 1986, that's when Section 42 of the IRS code was created under the Tax Reform Act that was the prescription for the creation of affordable housing. And that I had the privilege of working with all of the first string brain teams who were part of that and who subsequently created NHNRA, the organization that I was mentioning earlier that I had the distinct honor of being the chair of for the past 2 years. And when I would go to the NHNRA meetings, I would see these guys up there and I'd think, boy, that fella is older than a sea turtle. And then here I am. So many, many years later, I had to laugh at myself. But in any case, that provided the foundation for what I was doing. And we were, both our children were born in Boston and loved my job, loved where we lived, loved everything. After my father died, and I grew up on a farm that I was actually named for called The Hollies out on Newtown Pike. Very cool. And it was in our family for generations, and my mother was going to had to sell it because my father died and children all gone. So my husband said, I think we should buy it. And I said, how is that going to be possible? And at the time, he was hired away from Harvard by McKinsey, an international management consulting firm. And he said, well, all I need is an airport. So I'm like, this is a huge, I don't know how we're going to make this happen. But the project that I was wrapping up in Boston was 500 units of affordable housing. That was one of the very first ones through the chute under this program. And so when we made the decision to move back to Kentucky, buy the family farm, I was able, long before this became commonplace, I was able to do all of the draw requests and do all the work and send it by fax and FedEx every week back up to Boston for the first year. So I continued to work for Wynn remotely, which was crazy, in 1990. Wow. And that was the year that I then started AU. And the first few years, in order to develop a war chest to be able to afford to develop, I hired an ex-Lotus employee. Lotus was the precursor, a spreadsheet, to Microsoft Excel. But that was, I had learned Lotus because it had first come out when I was in business school, and developed a computer program to create a spreadsheet that would do all the calculations for a program that was going on in affordable housing that was too complicated for companies to do. So I was a consultant and flew around the country and did all the hard work of all of these spreadsheet calculations and equity takeouts for them, and they would pay me well, so because they would basically refinance their properties under a different program that was too inscrutable for, it was just too much brain damage for somebody to deal with. Yeah. So I love that and was able to generate enough money to then do my first development, which was the Midway School in Midway, Kentucky. That is that was the very first one, and that was and it still is 94 units. I'm sorry, 24 units. That was very small to begin with.
Yeah,
we had to get to the bigger ones later, as I mentioned. But 24 units of mixed income housing for seniors. And so 10 of the units were affordable and or were market rate, and the other 14 were affordable. And that was kind of that was cutting edge, because many people said, an old school. That building was built in 1924. It's been vacant. You can see from the pictures it was dilapidated. We should just tear it down. And I said, you know, they're in Boston, people would, it would never occur to somebody to tear down any of these historic buildings. Mm-hmm. There was also at the time, and still is, something called historic tax credits. And I combined historic tax credits and housing tax credits and was able to produce that as our first project. That, we've never done any marketing. I was on the construction site, and AU was just me for the first 13 years. I was the chief cook and bottle washer and construction manager and architectural review and everything else. And I was on the construction site one day, and this woman drives up, and she says, "You're Holly Wiedemann." And I said, "Well, yes, ma'am, I am.
I think so, yeah."
Last I checked. And she said, "Well, we have an old school in urban Kentucky, and you need to come down here and do it. And my husband's the mayor, but I'm the power behind the throne." I said, "Well, yes, ma'am, I'd be happy to come down." So anyway, it all became word of mouth, and one thing led to the next, and that's how AU got started, and built from there.
That's awesome. So most of our listeners know the difference between affordable and affordable with a capital A, but part of the podcast is to break down some of those terms of what people may misunderstand when getting into development. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Great, great question. So we jokingly call it, as you mentioned, there's little A affordable and capital A affordable. Little A affordable is also sometimes referred to as NOA, naturally occurring affordable housing. And that is similar to a project that, Wes, you and I were talking about earlier, that may have been, had deferred maintenance. It does not fall under any program. It's just more dilapidated. It's maybe apartments built in the 70s that really need some TLC, and are just by result of neglect, essentially, are there. Capital A affordable from a private sector, because we are a private for-profit developer. We utilize housing tax credits, which is through a specific program that was created, as I mentioned, under the IRS. And it was created to have a public-private partnership where we compete for an allocation of tax credits from each state has its own state agency. Ours is Kentucky Housing Corporation, and they award tax credits based upon scoring criterion. We then, if we're lucky enough to achieve an allocation, we turn around and sell those to an investor, maybe JP Morgan, a syndicator, a bank, and they buy those credits for us. And then with the funds that we get, that on a 9%, there's a 9% credit and 4% credit. On the 9%, the equity that we sell those credits for results in about 75% of the capital stack. Then we go and find the other 25%, the Affordable Housing Trust Fund from the Lexington Affordable Housing Fund has been fantastic. But the capital A affordable housing means that it's restricted rents and restricted on income. So nobody over 60% of median can live in a capital A affordable housing.
Median income of like that
of
city
that particular
or area.
Like gotcha. The SMSA for Lexington, for example. So how 60% of median in Lexington income for a family of one is approximately $33,000. It's adjusted on an annual basis. And it goes up. So if there are two people, it's maybe $36,000, $39,000, and so on. But that is your very tightly monitored income restriction. So obviously, the incomes are restricted, so the rents are restricted. And they are restricted for 30 years, a minimum of 15. But now all the development of affordable housing means that those rents are restricted and incomes are restricted for a 30-year period. So there, one more just casual affordable housing is what people are looking for if they want to be a first-time home buyer. There's no restriction on income. They're just, they're at a lower price point, which is becoming, as we were talking earlier, scarcer and scarcer to find for in Lexington, just because of the escalation both in rents and housing prices.
I would say that that brings us into, you know, we've talked, and the reason we wanted to have you on today especially was Lexington is such an interesting market because seemingly we're kind of like a bubble with our natural barrier. And so, you know, we talk about this a ton, but more affordability in housing and more infill projects are two topics that we talk about very, very extensively day-to-day in commercial real estate, but that we've definitely mentioned on this podcast. So because we're a Lexington-based podcast, I would say, can you give kind of thoughts of mitigating the housing situation in Lexington and how we can make that more affordable to, you know, people aged 20 to 40 that maybe don't have incredibly high paying jobs, just so we can open up that pool of people?
Sure. So what I will tell you, just for a little bit of context, over the past 3 years, we have been responsible for four projects in Lexington, in the urban service area, that represent 500 units of affordable housing.
That's incredible.
It is. And curiously, not one of them has received any mention within. I mean, we're very thankful for the publicity associated with the TV stations, but
it's not brought to light a ton.
It's
truly
not.
I can attest.
Well, for how hard it is for you all to develop that,
right?
That's
right.
Truly impressive.
It. I mean, it's. It's pretty amazing. And this all occurred during COVID as well. So we couldn't also have big groundbreakings like we were able to do last Friday with the mayor, as we were talking about earlier, who literally a true groundbreaking for 252 units on Kearney Boulevard. But right across from that, we completed 96 units of affordable housing for seniors right on off of Leestown in Meadowthorpe. That was the only vacant 3-acre parcel that is now 71 units of new construction urban infill. Just further down the road on Leestown, I was able to be successful in securing. We won the national RFP that the VA in Washington had put out for the adaptive reuse of four historic buildings, which we then augmented with an additional six other buildings for a total of 50 apartments and for veterans, preference for veterans, so that the services for veterans would be right on campus. I entered into a 75-year lease with the VA for 10 acres. And as you drive by there, the entrance is at Opportunity Way, and there are four beautiful historic buildings that are redone. And then, as I mentioned, six townhouse-type structures with an additional units to be 50 units. And we're also building a project called Polo Club that's out at Hamburg for 24 units. So all of this is happening on inside the urban service area and very quietly. What I would say that in order to produce more affordable housing, part of what needs to be part of a help, and when the city has talked about this before, but as an example, the fees associated with water tap-on fees, permits, everything else, you're in the high six figures to do that. If there is some way, and we have to borrow money from the city through the Affordable Housing Fund, it drives the costs up. So why not waive some of these fees and permit and tap-on fees that we have to borrow money for? Then we don't have to borrow money from the city to pay the city back, essentially. And that could reduce the cost. And part of the exchange is that we agree to keep these affordable for X number of years and restrict, you know, some of the affordable housing funds can go up to 80% of median, which is consistent with your question on keeping affordability. But the biggest leverage point to create affordable, true affordable housing with a capital A is the equity that we get from selling tax credits. The problem in, believe it or not, in the Lexington area, as high as people, as high as rents are on market rate units, that's because construction costs are really high. The only way that we can't lower construction costs, so the only way that we can do that is to find other financial resources to bring down, to allow us to reduce the rents. And the most effective tool for doing that are tax credits. And it's because rents are not, if it costs $120,000 to build a unit, you'd have to be charging $1,500 for rent.
Right.
It still costs us that much, but we make up that differential in credits. So it's a conundrum when our rents are you know, with construction prices at the level that they are.
So one of the things I found just fascinating on your resume was that you're on the Federal Reserve Board for one of the district banks. Is that correct?
Well, Federal Reserve is divided into 11 banks across the United States, and they regulate the currency, they set interest rates, they basically create economic policy. And so I am on the Cleveland Federal Reserve, which is pretty amazing. It's incredible to be on kind of the front row seat, and I represent the affordable housing industry because the people, my fellow board members, are each in different industries and represent that. And the Fed uses our information to create the Beige Book, which is what are indicators of what's happening, and that provides feedback for them to determine what's going on in what industry. So that helps shape economic policy. And as you know, with inflation, inflation had been sort of staggered and stuck at about 1.8% for quite some time. With everything that has transpired, inflation being highest in 40 years or longer, that's why we're going to be seeing, as we all know, the increase in interest rates to try to dampen the effect of inflation.
Right. So is the trough of interest rates something great for affordable housing? Is it something that as it raises,
absolutely,
that we're going to have a harder time producing?
That's a great question. And a prime example of that is we wanted to close the financing associated with Kearney, the 252 unit project, before the end of the year, because the headwinds were already there, and we were tied to the 10-year T-bill, which that's what a lot of financing is tied to. And the 10-year T-bill had been, you know, at like 121, 123. By the time we closed, it had gone up to 1.7, which that huge swing cost us a huge amount of more money that we had to figure out how to come up with, which basically makes it more of a challenge. So you hit the nail on the head. The increase in the interest rates are going to exacerbate the problem for affordable housing, for sure.
So if you got to dream about what Lexington's going to look like in another 10 years, another 20 years, what is that? What are you excited for? What are you hopeful for? And
well, I am really excited, I must say, about what's happening downtown. I think the town branch, the new convention center, it has taken a while to get going, but it really has finally, it's always the pioneers who get the arrows in the back. And I mean, I certainly did on our tech because that was a tough area, but now it is becoming one of the most valuable because of its proximity to Town Branch, to the new LCC, the Central Bank Center. But the Distillery District took a while, as you all know, to take off. And that's going to be another fabulous area. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing that. I will tell you that the farm that before we moved to what was my grandparents' farm, we had a farm that backed up to the golf course behind the Campbell House. And all that was farmland, and I could ride my pony from our farm to the Red Mile. Wow. I mean, there was really not much in between.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to continue to see that. I think there needs to be probably the more density in the downtown area. And I think that we still have room to do that. I do feel strongly about our surrounding farmland for the thoroughbred industry is, in fact, the factory floor. And that is something that makes our area in Lexington so unique and so extraordinary. And it's always going to be a tough friction between how that is all going to work.
But that's what makes Lexington such a unique place, I think. We mentioned this last podcast as well, and then obviously in Dudley's podcast, he said that Lexington is like a national park in that way.
It is.
You know, we don't want to develop that farmland because obviously there's money to be made there, but there is just such a natural beauty that goes along with the city of Lexington. That's why people want to live here.
That's exactly right.
Right. So I'm curious as to, you said downtown needs some more density. Is affordable housing part of that?
I would say it is. And, you know, I'm excited for Winterwood is doing a project, Thistledown, that is right off of 3rd across from the Lawrence Brewer and Son feed mill. They're going to be doing 208 units there of affordable housing, which is fabulous. And it's hard. I mean, construction is hard. And with supply chain disruptions, you know, on Oasis, we had to our GC Brett Construction, who did a phenomenal job for us, ordered 92 or 96 units of appliances, six appliances per unit, because we had to deliver it on time. JP Morgan doesn't care about supply chain. Oh, thanks, Holly, for sharing. But guess what? We really are going to get our return whether you have a problem or not, because it will come out of you if we don't. So we had to order everything, you know, months ahead of time. And that along with what's going on in the Ukraine, and that is just continuing to be exacerbated and driving costs up. But that is an important part of it. We were disappointed not to get, we had submitted what was a fabulous project for to KHC to get funded and for us to do the second phase of Davis Park. And we had submitted, with the support of the city, a development of 60 apartments and a workforce training program that the mayor had committed funds to do. We thought, how can they say no to this? And unfortunately, the competition is so fierce. I hope that we submit it again because it's an outstanding project, and And that area is ripe for higher density development.
Is there anything you want to say before we wrap up?
I'm just honored to that you all ask me, and you can tell that I'm passionate about this. I love it. I love the fact that I had the opportunity to create AU, and I'm even more excited that it is in the hands of the next generation and will continue. And I love Lexington.
Well, it's truly impressive to see an authentic Lexington developer that has the heart for the placemaking and downtown and people at the core of everything you do. That's amazing. Well,
thank you. My grandmother said to me many, many years ago as a child, to whom much has been given, much is expected. And it's your job to try to make the world a better place. So I tried to live by that.